Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Now, a warning that some listeners and younger ears may find the contents of this next report distressing. Emergency responders have been giving evidence about the harrowing scenes that greeted them in the aftermath of the Omagh bombing, where 29 people, including a woman pregnant with twins, were murdered in a real IRA bomb. They were giving evidence at the public inquiry into the atrocity, which was set up by the British government to examine whether it could have been prevented. Our reporter Una Kelly was there. And Una, what did we hear today?
We heard from Richard Quigley. He was a paramedic on duty. He was at Elton Galvin Hospital in Derry that day when the crew received the code red alert to go to Omagh. He said that by the time they got there, most casualties had been moved to Omagh County Hospital, and he described it as oddly quiet in the town with no screaming of patients. He recalled the smell of beer was strong at the bomb site as it flowed down the street from a bar that had been damaged in the explosion. Crews at that stage were going into buildings to find people who were trapped. Richard said that the next phase was body recovery. He said the body bags with the remains of the dead had been moved into shops away from eyes and cameras. He said they had used up all the body bags they had in the ambulance and had to source more from the police and military. He says that the bodies had then been moved into an alley that led from Market Street, where the bomb had gone off, to the car park where the ambulances were waiting. Richard was then instructed to assist with moving them into the vehicles.
Each vehicle was loaded with 3 to 4 body bags. I was asked to go into Market Street through the walkway and left and into a shop. There were more body bags inside the shop. I was instructed to wait for a voluntary crew to arrive to lift 2 to 3 body bags into their vehicle to take to the temporary morgue. I physically checked the body bags to see if I could identify which end was the head or legs. What shocked me was not being able to clearly identify either the head or the feet of the patients.
Richard said that they then drove in convoy with the lights on to the temporary morgue in the army camp. He recalled seeing the number of body bags laid out. He said the size of the gym and the number of body bags on the floor was something that should only have been seen in a movie. And this is how Richard Quigley summed up his evidence.
On a personal note, I have yet to walk around Market Street or to the Peace Garden. I can still remember the smell of the beer from the street corner. Will I ever walk through the alleyway where the bodies had laid, end to end? Probably never. Should I? Maybe I would get closure. I will never forget that day.
So that's Richard Quigley there, who was a paramedic who was in Omagh in the aftermath of the explosion. And Una, the inquiry also heard today from a firefighter who was one of the first on the scene.
Yes, it was Paddy Quinn. He's now a temporary station commander in the fire service. He was a retained firefighter at the time. He was working in his own carpet shop business in the town when the explosion happened. His alerter went off and he said that a crew of 6 firefighters had arrived within minutes. He said that at that stage, no one was overly anxious as they had responded to bombs before and there was no mention of casualties at that stage. But he said the reality was very different. He said that he has a permanent photograph in his head of the aftermath and that it was like something from the Vietnam War. In his statement to the inquiry, he said it was total chaos, devastation, carnage, although he added he doesn't have the vocabulary to really describe what he saw. He helped a woman who was injured onto the Ulster bus that was being used to transport injured people to the hospital. He said that the floor wasn't blue, it was red. Paddy commented that he had seen previous interviews with families of troubles victims in the media who said that they could not forgive what had happened and that he never understood that, but said, "In that moment, I knew why. I knew why you would say that from what I witnessed." until today at the inquiry, Paddy had never spoken publicly about his experience or even spoken about it with his family because he said he wanted to protect them from it. In the immediate aftermath, in the days after the bomb, he said when his friends rang him to check if he was all right, he would say that he was fine, but they didn't see him crying. He said he didn't know why he was crying, but this horror story kept unfolding and unfolding as time went on. He said that he thought he was fine, but 3 months later, he was having nightmares, dreaming things that he saw that day, things he thinks that his mind had blocked out until that moment. He said that for years, he could not drive or walk on Market Street where people had died and were injured. And he finished his evidence today with a saying that he says was common among his colleagues. The firefighter may leave the incident, but the incident doesn't leave the firefighter.
And Una, in the past hour, the inquiry heard the final commemorative statement about someone who was murdered that day.
Yes, James Barker was 12 when he was murdered. His father, Victor Barker, just delivered a pen portrait of him via video link. James had been living in his earlier years with his family in Surrey. His family had then moved to Buncrana in Donegal, as James's mother was from Derry. James was described as kind, caring, gentle and outgoing and interested in sport. He'd become interested in golf and he said that he wanted to become a lawyer, just like his father, Victor. The day before the bomb, James and his father had been at Ballyliffin Golf Club. They'd also hired a boat and gone out fishing on Loch Swilly. Now, that summer of 1998, a Spanish student, Lucretia Blasco Balsega, was staying with the family. And James's elder sister, Estella, was due to go on a trip with that Spanish group to Oma. And Victor Barker described what happened that morning.
On the morning of the 15th of August, James was up early and was very excited to have breakfast with me. However, whilst we were eating, my daughter Estella, who was due to go on a trip to the Ulster American Folk Park with Lucretia in Oma, told my wife she was not feeling well and would not be going with Lucretia and Fernando. James immediately asked if he could go in her place, and I am sure that a day with friends getting up to mischief would be much more appealing to him than caddying for his father. This was the last time I saw my son alive.
Victor Barker then later in his evidence described the moment that they had to identify James's body. He said he experienced feelings and emotions that he could not put into words. He said the sense of helplessness was beyond description and that the next few hours were simply hell. Meanwhile, Lucretia, the Spanish student, was in hospital in Belfast, so Victor Barker had to contact her family. He said he felt a sense of guilt because she had been in their care at the time. Victor Barker also said that James's sister Estella never recovered from the feeling of guilt of James taking her place on the trip that day. Victor Barker also described how on the Sunday after the bomb he had picked up a newspaper and there was a photo of James on the front of it, a photo of him in a stretcher, and he held it up and simply said, "Look what they've done to my boy." He also talked about how they had no privacy in their grief. He said that when they went to collect James from Oma, the scenes at the church were indescribable and the making of nightmares. He talked about how the family had a feeling of a lack of control around the time of the wakes and funerals and that it was more like a state funeral. James Barker had been buried in Buncrana initially. Victor Barker said this seemed to happen without discussion, but later James was reburied in a private cemetery at St George's College in England. Victor Barker said that they have been woefully let down by very poorly conducted police investigation, in his words. And he said that the civil trial into the matter had also been very difficult for the families. At the conclusion of his evidence, he said, "Sometimes I doubt that James has the same human rights as the terrorists, but we should all remember that pain has no nationality and no borders, but neither does the love of the human heart."
And Una, the inquiry also heard today about the lasting mental impact for some people.
Yes, there were statements from two sisters, Maeve and Dervla O'Brien. They were evacuated from Market Street, but were close by when the bomb exploded. They had just got out of the way on time and they weren't physically injured, but the mental impact has stayed with them. Maeve was 13 at the time and Dervla was 8. Maeve said it was the loss of innocence and that she now has a true understanding of the saying, "Your blood runs cold." She said living through such an experience embeds itself in your DNA. And she said she also believes that the therapeutic resources and support have not been enough for troubles victims. Her sister Dervla, for many years after, has suffered from anxiety and panic attacks. She said that she now understands that the experience altered her nervous system irreversibly.
I know the inquiry continues tomorrow, but it has to pause for a time during the morning. Why is that?
Listeners might remember that last week we heard the stories of Gary and Donna McGillian. They were survivors of the bomb, although they were both severely injured. They had been in the town that day with Gary's niece, Breda Devine. She was 20 months old and she was murdered that day. Now, Breda's mother, Tracy Devine, was also with them in the town that day and was severely injured in the bomb. Tracy Devine died this past Saturday and her funeral will take place tomorrow morning. So the inquiry will pause during that time as a mark of respect.
Una Kelly, thank you very much.